The Taliban and ISIS claim responsibility. Mattis says they can expect retaliation.
They will find the Afghan security forces continuing on the offensive against them.
The missile attacks did some damage, but nobody was injured. I'm Chris Barnes.
DirecTV is giving some of its NFL Sunday Ticket customers refunds after athletes took a knee during the national anthem. The satellite TV service does not typically refund money for the NFL Sunday Ticket after the season starts, but customers are reporting they've received refunds after complaining about the actions of the players. Get more news online at usaradio.com.
Hi, my name is Kip Herridge, and I'm the founder of the Vertical Research Advisory, or VRA. After 15 years on Wall Street, I founded the VRA in 2003, my daily investment newsletter that's been crushing the market for 14 years. I tell you what to buy and when to sell and take profits, and I only target stocks that have the ability to rise by 50% or more. For the first time, we're offering a free two-week membership. Simply go to VRAinsider.com. You also get my new book, Crash Proof Prosperity, Becoming Wealthy in the Age of Trump. Join us now at VRAinsider.com.
A new study is taking a look at the impact of genetics on autism.
Researchers at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York reanalyzed an earlier study of millions of children. Their findings suggest that rare genetic traits inherited from parents combine in about 83% of autism cases in children. The author of the study published on Tuesday says the research doesn't give any information about specific genes or other direct causes, just that genes play an important role. The study is in Tuesday's edition of the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Video of a woman causing an incident on a Southwest flight is going viral. Here's Jason Campidonia.
The plane was getting ready to hit the runway Tuesday when the woman claimed that she had a life-threatening pet allergy. She refused to get off the plane, so the cops were called in and she wasn't going peacefully.
I will walk off. Don't touch me.
Don't touch me. The woman saw two dogs get on the flight, made her complaint to the flight attendant, but had no proof of her illness. Passengers eventually pleaded with her to leave.
I'm a professor. What are you doing?
Jeez, lady, get off the plane.
During the confrontation, a flight attendant can be heard asking people to stop filming the incident. Southwest Airlines has released a statement saying they're disheartened by the way the situation unfolded.
Multiple reports now say one person is dead, another injured, after a stabbing at a public school in the Bronx. It happened just before 11 o'clock this morning, according to fire officials. There's no word yet whether it involves students, staff, or teachers. USA Radio News.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
It's time for Legends of Success with John Resnick. Each week, John presents the most original success stories in America. Passionate and inspiring stories from some of the most innovative and successful entrepreneurs alive today. This is Legends of Success. Here's John Resnick.
And welcome to today's edition of Legends of Success. This is America's program that introduces you firsthand to our country's most intriguing entrepreneurs, CEOs, and Forbes 400 members and where you get the opportunity to hear them share their stories of how they got there. I'm John Resnick, and thanks again for being with us today. Well, folks, today we go straight to the top of the food chain as we visit with Cliff Hudson, the chairman and CEO of Sonic, America's most successful drive-in restaurant business. We're going to hear how this once single-location eatery is now outpacing the competition all across the country. Cliff, welcome to Legends of Success.
Thank you, John. Glad to be with you today.
Well, glad to be with you. Now, I've just got to ask you this question. What did you have for breakfast today?
I hate to tell you, but most mornings I don't eat breakfast. That's probably not the right answer.
Well, I want to hear some kind of Sonic serving or something. Well, it's good to have you with us. And I'd like to hear, for the listeners, I'd like them to hear, if you would please, Cliff, give an overview of Sonic. Most people out there in America know about it, but for the ones that don't, how big are they? How many locations? And let's get a stat picture of them today.
Great. Yeah, Sonic is a 1950s-style drive-in restaurant. Began in the 1950s, 1953, as a matter of fact, and for the first half dozen years, it was called Top Hat.
Mm-hmm.
And when our founder, Troy Smith, decided to start franchising the concept, he tried to get the name Top Hat registered and was not able to. And so he changed the name. It's an interesting story in its own right, but he changed the name to Sonic in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Grew it from really just a handful of stores at that time, and about 15 years later, he had 250 or so drive-ins. It's now 3,200 drive-ins, mm-hmm. roughly.
Wow.
And we do just over $3.3 billion in system-wide sales. So it's grown quite substantially over its 50 years of history.
That's pretty significant. And out of all those locations, how many are franchise versus corporate, Cliff?
Just over 80% are franchised. We own about 600 stores out of 3,200, and the remainder are owned by and large by multi-unit operators, strong entrepreneurs, most of whom have been in our business for a lot of years, and for most of them, Sonic is the only business in which they are involved.
Mm-hmm. And many of these are family-owned business just by the culture of Sonic, aren't they?
Yes, that's exactly right, and oftentimes not only family-owned, but second and sometimes third generations involved in the business.
I love to hear that. You know, we had a discussion the other day, and I've been a business succession planner, and I've been an adjunct professor on family business. So when I hear the survival of family-owned business, I'm inspired that there's just too much attrition with family-owned businesses, aren't there?
Yes. I suppose in some ways the good thing about the franchising business for a family-owned business is the continuity that a franchisor can provide in the business is probably helps augment the strength of the family-owned business from generation to generation.
And you also, I mean, by design, you have smart growth. And in a moment, we'll get back to the history and see where it wasn't like that at one time. But now you have, is it location or is it territory that you look to market to your franchisees?
Well, it is territory that we look to market to a franchisee. A new franchisee comes to our business. We enter into an area development agreement with them, and they agree to open. Usually it's four or five restaurants in a 4 or 5 year period. And they have, once they open the restaurant, they have exclusive territory for that restaurant, but they also have exclusive development territory as they begin building new restaurants.
Well, I find that great, wonderful, because, you know, you're looking at 3,200 locations starting out with a single location that you not only teach them to operate, but you teach them the big picture on how to become real entrepreneurs and larger business owners.
We work with our franchisees very closely on kind of two levels that you mentioned. One, with our franchise leadership, we really engage them, embrace them in the planning, the strategic planning of our business.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of involving them in the bigger picture, the strategy, they're very much involved in that planning. But also as it relates to the small franchisee who may only be operating 5 or 7 drive-ins, we engage them in terms of their own business planning, their people, their internal processes, their systems. We engage them to help build what we would like to think we're building the best-run small businesses in America.
Well, obviously, there's a pretty strong track record with the numbers that you are growing. What's the differentiating factors with Sonic versus other
fast food or drive up. You're the biggest drive in. And can you explain what we mean by drive in versus drive to?
Right. I suspect many of your listeners may be familiar with the drive ins of the 50s, but to the extent they're not, in our case, rather than indoor seating or just a drive through window, we have canopies extending from our building, and the customer pulls under a canopy, parks under the canopy, and usually there's going to be 24 to 30 parking stalls underneath those canopies at the average drive-in. And then a menu housing is attached to the canopy, and it's just outside the driver window. And the menu is laid out there. There's a button on it. When the customer decides what they want to eat, they push the button, and through an intercom system, the order is taken from the manager or someone else inside the restaurant, and usually within about 4 minutes, the freshly made, customized food is brought to the customer by a car hop.
And so that probably allows less of a build-out factor for you folks as well, because if it's mostly all eating in your car, that's probably less expense to build a location.
That's right, because in the QSR business, at least two-thirds, and probably growing, but two-thirds of the business is carry out anyway, so we're kind of built to leverage off of that. Instead of having expensive dining rooms and so on, we let the folks pay for their own dining rooms.
I love it. Take me back. I mean, we're talking about 3,200 locations today, and I think you mentioned Troy Smith's name. Take me back to the beginning. Who's Troy Smith, and where did he come from,
Cliff? Yeah, Troy Smith, he was the founder of our concept and has had a positive impact on thousands of people's lives. Troy began a restaurant business after he got out of the military. He was in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Originally, he was operating a full-service restaurant, but he observed a fellow nearby operating a root beer stand. As he talked to the fella, he realized that the guy had much better profit margins than he had in the full-service business, a less complex business in Troy's view at the time, but one he thought he could probably end up making more money doing that. So he actually bought a root beer stand, as he called it, and began growing that business and found it much more profitable with one restaurant in Shawnee, and then started working with others to expand it. But in the 50s, he still had just a handful of restaurants only in the state of Oklahoma.
I find that interesting, and it's pretty cool when you look at the business model. So he found that first Top Hat with that root beer stand had more – it was a more control – a better margin, better profit margin. I guess it's like buying 100 Baltic Avenues versus one Park Place.
I suppose that's one way to look at it. That's right.
You know, I mean, that's pretty cool. People sometimes discount small margins on small operations, but when you have a lot of them, they're actually insulated better than one large one. What were his early days like? I mean, was this guy a restaurateur? I wonder, you know, what drove him into this business?
Yeah, I think he was really a restaurateur. He was already in the restaurant business before he got into what became the Sonic business. He really was. I never have sensed about Troy, and as I look back to the business originally, he really was not a promoter style of person. It was in the late 50s that he met a fellow by the name of Charlie Pappy, who also happened to have a drive-in more in western Oklahoma. Charlie saw what Troy was doing, and Charlie approached him and said, you know, if we were to combine what we're doing here, we could grow this much more rapidly. You could oversee operations. I'll oversee sales and expansion. And so they did go into business together. And with Charlie's more, I think, promoter or salesman orientation, the business began to grow more rapidly in the 60s.
I love it. And, you know, here we have a classic business where you have two different personalities, but they knew how to get along and build a business. When we get back, folks, we're going to find out how those first couple locations and what you call a wonderful strategic partnership in business grew to what is today America's leading drive-in restaurant business, Sonic. We'll be back with Cliff Hudson, Chairman and CEO on Legends of Success, right after this.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. It's officially fall, which means football fans are lining up at stadiums across the country to cheer on their favorite teams. According to a Bank of America survey, of the Americans planning to attend a tailgate this football season, more than half plan to travel for a game. Jason Gaughan, Bank of America executive.
While traveling to away games can be expensive, you can offset the cost by using the right rewards card that lets you earn points towards travel on your everyday purchases. With the Bank of America Travel Rewards credit card, you earn 1.5 points for every dollar spent. Whether buying a morning coffee or a new pair of shoes, Points that you earn from these purchases can add up and pay off in a big way when you put them toward a trip to your favorite team's away game.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/travelconnected. That's bankofamerica.com/travelconnected.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our Restaurant Showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org.
5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hi, this is Steve Forbes of Forbes Magazine. When you want to learn who America's most successful people are, read our Forbes 400 list. When you want to hear firsthand how they got there, listen to Legends of Success with John Resnick. Legends of Success is one of the most original radio programs in years. Legends of Success with John Resnick.
Cliff Hudson is the chairman and CEO of America's number one drive-in restaurant business, Sonic Drive-In. And we're hearing the story of how Troy Smith started out 1953 with a single tiny location. Today, there's over 3,200 locations and growing strong. Tremendous story. Troy Smith went into business. He created a partnership with Charlie Pappy. Is that correct?
That's correct. You got it.
And after a few short years, that partnership, although it was a good partnership, it didn't sustain long term. Tell me what happened, Cliff.
Well, they did have very good complementary personality styles, with Troy focusing on operations, with Charlie focusing a little bit more on expansion and a little bit more of a salesman orientation. They grew for a number of years into the mid-60s, and then, unfortunately, Charlie Pappy passed away in the mid-60s.
And now this is a crucial point in business, and it's something you and I discussed on the phone the other day. I spend most of my full-time life in business succession and buy-sells. There had to be a crucial buy-sell agreement here for the survival of this business, or it could not have gone on. Can you explain if there was one and what it did for this business?
Yeah, in fact, there was one in place. Troy had had, I think, pretty good legal advice in the 50s and the 60s and was really doing all of this right. Mm-hmm. That included a buy-sell agreement in his partnership with Charlie Pappy. And when Charlie passed away, Troy was able to step in. In fact, I believe it was insurance-funded, I've heard over the years.
God bless him.
But Troy was able to step in, and with the insurance proceeds by Charlie's heirs, I should say, or his estate, out of his interest in the business.
And I'll tell you where that's important. You have heirs who are not active in the business. You want to treat them fairly, but fair doesn't always mean bringing them into a business they're not qualified or interested in. And, you know, for you to grow from those few locations and for this partnership to have a good buy-sell back in the 60s, I don't believe you could get as far as you are today with 3,200 locations, Cliff, if you didn't require some kind of buy-sell agreement, something that we have all of our clients take part in for their businesses.
Yeah, I think that was critical. I don't think the chain would have advanced in the 60s had that not been in place. But we also have some variations on that theme in our license agreements now in terms of heirs who come into the business and ensuring that they have the appropriate skills, and if they don't, us having a right, our, as a franchisor, to acquire the drive-ins and either operate them as our own or sell them to third parties. So it's I think, critical to a smooth, continuing smooth operation of the business.
And by all means, don't have a buy-sell without the funding, or you're going to be sitting there with an agreement and no way to buy and sell.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And they did have that well-structured in the mid-60s, and I'm sure it made a fundamental difference in the ongoing success of the business.
Yeah, you're here today because of it, I believe. Now, by 1973, my notes tell me there were 165 locations. What was the big growth spurt from 63 with 19 locations, Cliff, to 73 to 165?
Charlie and Troy in the 60s, when they began growing, brought in a number of folks that were probably 10 to 15 years younger than them in the late 50s and 60s and started growing them as franchisees. Mm-hmm. I would say there were perhaps as many as 10 individuals that began growing, primarily Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. And so that group, mm-hmm. over the next 10 to 15 years, opened, given the original base of the system, opened quite a few drive-ins into the 70s as individual developer operators.
That's pretty interesting. So they had the foresight and just a vision to allow these younger people to come along and develop, where so often we don't see that in businesses everywhere, do we, Cliff?
No, we don't. And I'll tell you, Troy, once Charlie had passed away, Troy really had further oversight, because these same fellas, 10, 12 of them that grew it in the 60s into the early 70s, came to Troy at that time, mm-hmm. mid-70s now at this point, and said, Troy, you know, we really have a lot of drive and passion for this business. So why don't you think about rolling this into a closely controlled company of which this group of individuals will be stockholders, mm-hmm. you, Troy, be the largest stockholder, but fold in the brand, fold in the license agreements that you have in the royalty stream, in essence, kind of sell the company and let us do what would later have been called a leveraged buyout.
Wow.
And let the dozen of us own and drive this thing, and we, because of this new ownership, will be even more passionate about this thing and grow it more rapidly.
I love it. Now, about what year was that LBO? That was a $10 million LBO, correct?
Well, later became an LBO then, that was a group of franchisees in the mid-70s that took it and grew it quite dramatically, 70s into the 80s, okay. And then it retrenched, pulled back, actually closed a few hundred stores in the early 80s.
Right.
A new management team came in the 80s, of which I was a part of that management team, came in 84 to 85, and then we signed a deal in 85 to buy the company. And in 86, our management team did buy the company for approximately $10 million.
Right. Now, this is what makes it interesting. I have, say, from 1981 to about 1984, there were actually 300 closings. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Very rapid expansion in the 70s, perhaps with some infrastructure lacking that needed to be there from a marketing, purchasing, distribution, field operations standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And so the early 80s were unfortunate about retrenchment and decline of the chain. Some question about survivability, but a new management team brought in that 84 time frame that ultimately turned it around, but frankly only turned it around after getting control of the company.
Sure, sure. And imagine that rapid growth where they finally closed those 300 locations may have not been a strategic and a wise contiguous quality growth. They were just opening up in a whole bunch of locations that may not have made a whole lot of sense.
I think that's right. They had some very competitive, is a good thing to have, but competitive individuals whose focus apparently became getting locations open rather than thinking about, as would later be thought of, as developing a brand, or even from a business development standpoint, just putting in place the necessary support structure to make sure the business would grow from a quality standpoint instead of just quantity.
Mm. Cliff, from those 300 closings, there has to be one monumental core lesson. There's got to be one great one. What would you say that lesson learned from the 300 closings, the pain of going through that? What did Sonic pull out of that? What did they do?
Well, our view was probably at least twofold. Mm-hmm. One, that as a management team, we had to go back and kind of rebuild the support structure that needed to be there in the first place, which is kind of what the turnaround was then in the late 80s. But then in addition to that, as we look to new growth in the future, new territories, new day parts, et cetera, that we needed to be mindful not to repeat what we had before, to the degree possible, and make sure we put the resources behind new growth, again, whether that was geographic, day parts, products, whatever it was, and put resources behind it to increase the likelihood of success of those initiatives.
Mm. And with this 81 to 84, I go back to them because you don't really hear a lot of people talk about that. And you share that readily about your history, which I admire. A lot of people will bury stuff like that. At the same time, were your competitors, were the Burger Kings, McDonald's of the world, were they retrenching or were they growing? In other words, were you the only one falling off so bad?
Well, I don't recall. There were, of the major folks, I don't recall anybody retrenching the way we did. That did occur later. One of the things that occurred by the late 70s was that the growth in restaurant chains had occurred to such a great degree in the 70s mm-hmm. that the supply of the restaurant concepts kind of crossed paths, you might say, with the demand at that time on eating out. And so there are all kinds of chains that did develop in the 70s that by the 80s had pretty much disappeared. You can probably remember Mini Pearls and a variety of concepts that through that the 70s did expand rapidly, and by the 80s they were gone.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. There are a couple classic brands. Whatever happened to Howard Johnson's, right?
Yeah. That's
amazing. You know, folks, when we're listening to this story, and Cliff, I want to commend you for your honesty and openness with this. Folks, not everything was always smooth sailing for Sonic. But when we get back, we're going to find out right around those that time when those 300 locations closed, they brought on an unlikely candidate that saved Sonic's downward spiral and turned them around into America's most successful drive-in restaurant business today. That man is our guest, Cliff Hudson. We're going to find out where Cliff came from. How did he get in this business? And boy, things took off from there for a while. We'll be back on Legends of Success right after this.
Hi, this is Ethan Resnick, and you're listening to my dad, John Resnick, on Legends of Success.
Now, some legendary advice from the Legends of Success. Johnny Carrabba took Carrabba's restaurants nationwide with hard work and a drive to serve only the best.
You've got young entrepreneurs and students listening, and they're just dying to get the one piece of wisdom. What advice do you have for them?
Well, for one thing, you never quit, and there's no substitute for hard work. Hard work is mandatory, and you have to be passionate about what you do. But what I love to talk about is I love to talk about fundamentals. You have to figure out what the fundamentals of your business are, and you have to execute them, and you have to have high morale. High morale comes from winning. Winning is a byproduct of executing fundamentals. And the other thing, I want to go back to what my Uncle Ciro told me. You have to do what you love. If you do what you love, the money will follow and happiness will follow.
To learn more about the Legends, visit legendsofsuccess.com.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Today, we are taking the next step to liberate Americans from our broken tax code.
House Speaker Paul Ryan at a press conference today where Republicans announced their new tax relief plan.
This unified framework delivers a new tax code that is simple, that is fair, that is pro-growth and pro-family.
The Republican leadership said the reduction in taxes on businesses will allow them to hire more people and bring bigger paychecks home for the American worker. President Trump says he's going to be negotiating with Democrats on health care. The president made the comment at the White House today when he was asked about the failure of the latest Senate Republican health care bill. He also said he plans to sign an executive order in the near future on purchasing health insurance across state lines, but the president didn't elaborate. Meanwhile, the president expressed confidence in Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. All of you know what my insanely busy life is like. 12 careers in businesses, national radio and TV, books, speeches. So I don't have much time to sleep. But when I do sleep, it better be quality sleep. And that's been my problem for years. I toss and turn and wake up 10 times a night. I never realized why until now. My Pillow just sent me pillows for me and my entire family. Now, for the first time in my life, I'm sleeping like a baby. I wake up feeling like $1 million. Thank you, My Pillow. You changed my life. And my kids all love My Pillow too. The whole Root family is a believer in My Pillow. How about this? My Pillow comes in a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Wow. To get 50% off a 4-pack of pillows, go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Special. Use promo code USA. That's it. You get 50% off at MyPillow.com or call 800- 800-951-8175. That's 800-951-8175. And use promo code USA.
Sonic Drive-In is America's number one drive-in restaurant business, and our guest today is Cliff Hudson, the chairman and CEO. And you know, folks, it's not always, you never see a chart to go straight up with anything. There were setbacks. We're talking about 1981 to 84, there was a close down, a shutdown of 300 of their locations. And this is about the time you were coming in and got on board. Now, what was your background, Cliff, and how did you get on board with Sonic?
Well, a little bit different path than many people might get into our industry, whether franchising or the restaurant business. I was a business lawyer, and I was in private practice, and I was pursuing the company as a client. I had a former neighbor who was an officer, a senior officer of Sonic, and I was doing my best to see what I could do to get some legal business for my law firm from Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
In the process of trying to hustle them, so to speak, I didn't realize it, but I was getting hustled.
I love it.
I met the new CEO and talked to a number of people, and at the finish line they said, well, what we want is we want you to come in with our new management team and head up the legal affairs of the business. So in 1984, that's what I ended up doing.
Well, and also in 1984, you're like near the end of closing down 300 locations. Were you thinking, am I jumping on a sinking ship here?
Well, you know, there's a little broader story there, too. That I think, first of all, I was about 29 years old, and if I'd have been 10 years older, I probably would have had a little bit more concern. But the fact is, I was also practicing law in Oklahoma City in 1984, and it was a couple of years into an enormous oil bust, and so a business practice was almost becoming a bankruptcy practice.
Wow.
So the appeal of a company that was a new young management team, the CEO was 36 years old, I was 29, and the appeal of this new young management team coming in place probably had a different appeal than it would have had in a more vibrant economic environment, frankly.
That's quite intriguing. So you were used to doing turnarounds or seeing companies that were failing, so you kind of cut your teeth from that in the oil industry, so that didn't scare you so much to join Sonic.
Probably didn't scare me so much, but also seeing so many of these struggling companies in the area kind of gave me a different perspective about the quality of this company. But
sure.
As I said, I was also 29, and to some degree, you had no kids at the time and little debt, and I think your appreciation of what the risks where they were involved is very different than it might have been 10 or 15 years later.
And Cliff, now you were a practicing attorney, you were practicing in law, and you're joining this business. Now, obviously, they recruited you to be general counsel, in-house general counsel. I would fathom to say that you didn't go to school in college or have a background in business. It was probably more history or something like that. Did you even have an interest in going into business when you were growing up?
Well, no. When I was growing up, though my father was an entrepreneur, I didn't really see myself going that path, wasn't sure what path I would go. And as a matter of fact, my undergraduate degree was in history,
mm-hmm.
and studied a fair amount of European history and languages. And when I went to law school, originally thought I might go into international law. I took my degree from Georgetown University and studied a fair amount of international law.
Mm-hmm.
It was only the latter half of law school that in taking corporation, tax, securities law, and getting some practical experience that I started saying, this business law area is something I actually enjoy more than I ever would have imagined. So that the engagement in business, yes, some of it, some angle of it through law practice, but most of what I picked up in business ultimately, other than some, I think, intuitive and leadership skills developed as a younger person, most of the business acumen picked up was on-the-job training once joining Sonic.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, we hear this from so many of our guests, and there really is no school to become a chairman or CEO, is there, except on-the-job training.
Yeah, you've got it. It is every CEO job is different because of the company and because of the individual and the team, and it really is a circumstance or development that's peculiar to the circumstance.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, folks, I want to give a couple of stats here that Cliff joined. You know, he was recruiting business from them. Instead, they recruited him. And during Cliff's tenure, and this wasn't Cliff alone, and he'll be the first to admit this, but during his tenure, the average profit per location went from $78,000 to $150,000, average sales from $602,000 per location to $1.1 million, and system-wide sales $880 million to $3 billion. and a market cap of their common stock from $185 million to $2 billion. Now, my question is, you join as general counsel, and you join a couple guys who are sharp executives. What was the first thing you're going to do with these 300 losses to start turning it around? There had to be a fire drill that you were taking part in.
Yeah, our turnaround in the 80s was on two tracks. But I should give a quick response to the numbers that you mentioned. The nice thing about the numbers you mentioned, those literally do track my 11 years as CEO of the company. So I'll take some fairly direct responsibility for those.
Uh-huh.
However, the numbers have been good for almost 20 years now.
Hmm.
And in those, if you go back to those mid-80s, there was a CEO, Steve Lind, at the time, and there was Chief Operating Officer Vern Stewart. And both the strategy development between the two of them, but more of the implementation on Vern's part, really were responsible for the turnaround in the 80s. Your question about, we must have been looking at a lot of some serious fire drills, fire sales, et cetera,
sure,
throughout time, in fact, was correct. The turnaround was really on two tracks. One was, how do we put in place the infrastructure that the system lacked for purchasing programs, purchasing and distribution of food and paper, marketing programs, capital investment across the system, and then a turnaround of a company store group that simply wasn't working well at all. That was one track. The second track was we had a bunch of non-income producers, a lot of poor assets that we needed to move out. Frankly, as general counsel of the company, I was somewhat more focused on the second group about how to help structure deals to move out assets that weren't producing income for us and get liabilities off of our balance sheet to the extent possible.
Mm-hmm.
Steve and Vern were more focused on the purchasing, distribution, marketing, capital investment programs for the system.
Can the lack of knowing a core business operation, so you come into Sonic, you weren't in Sonic previous, can the lack of the knowledge of a business be an advantage, Cliff?
Well, in some ways, I think if you're creative, ambitious, and got a lot of energy, you don't know, what to do. You don't know what not to do, I should say.
Yes.
And so you're perhaps more creative and wide open about how to get some things done and just reach a finish line. For me, coming in at age 29 into this circumstance and having a lot of energy and wanting to make an impact, in a business where there are very few internal management processes defined,
sure,
and it's a boy, you can just grab a hold, take responsibility, and drive a lot of results. It was a very stimulating environment in which to be able to ply my trade, so to speak. So I had a pretty fun time, almost from a seat of the pants standpoint in the business.
I love it. You roll up your shirt sleeves and you made it happen. You guys dug in. When we get back, we'll find out more about the growth of Sonic. Folks, we learned probably more from the setbacks than we do the successes. Cliff Hudson, the chairman of Sonic, is sharing those with us today. We'll be back right after this.
This is a special alert to consumers who owe back taxes to the IRS.
Due to the financial hardship consumers are facing during the decline in the U.S. economy, the Internal Revenue Service has made it easier to settle tax problems. An open phone line has been established by National Tax Relief. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-210-0311 today. That's 1-800-210-0311. When you call, you'll get information and see if you qualify. If you owe back taxes to the IRS and can't afford to pay them back, there's no need to fear anymore. You may qualify for a program that could settle your tax problems and save you money. For free information and to see if you qualify, call National Tax Relief today at 1-800-210-0311. That's 1-800-210-0311. 1-800-210-0311.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
This is Professor Stuart Diamond of the Wharton School of Business. You're listening to Legends of Success with John Resnick.
We're visiting today with Cliff Hudson, the chairman and CEO of America's number one leading and largest drive-in restaurant business. And next week, folks, we're going to meet Ronald Buddy McLean, who started flipping burgers at Sonic in his 20s, in his early 20s, and now he recently made a deal for his 100th Sonic location, an incredible success story. Today we got the corporate story, and next week we're going to hear about one of these operators who started at the bottom and definitely worked to the top. Cliff, before we took a break, we're talking about the early 80s, getting into the mid-80s, terrible attrition, 300 locations shutting down. You join in, you've got a team, you and a couple other executives. By the late 1980s, you're finally turning this thing around, okay? What happened, and where did you go next, and how did you get there?
Well, the turnaround was pretty significant in the late 80s. We had 3 years of double-digit, meaning in the teens, comparable store sales growth for the system. By 1990, the business was a completely different business than we had bought in 86 from a size and profitability standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And our partners, who owned 50% of the business, were ready to exit. They were independent investors and had not intended to be there more than just a few years.
Mm-hmm.
The method we used to take them out of the business was a public stock offering in which we raised some capital for the company, but they also offered their stock to the public and left their ownership. That was 1991 when we were able to finally pull that off. The interesting thing about this transition, though, was we went from being a turnaround company where we're a very leveraged company, that a lot of things not working well, having to figure out how to grow this company with no more resources, but a lot of fixes of getting people to work together and so on. And we had developed that culture of getting pulled into overhead growth, and our view was, how can we do more with less, literally? Once we've been public and we were able to start growing, we didn't have that debt anymore, the turnaround was complete, we wanted to grow, but we didn't change our management team, we didn't change our culture and our outlook, we weren't mindful of that shift. And so as we tried to start growing, 91, 92, 93, but still get pulled into overhead growth, et cetera, the fact is we didn't do it. We didn't pull it off. 91, 92, 93, we actually saw our growth rate decline substantially.
Mm-hmm.
Our stock went sideways from 92 to 94, even 95. So a very painful period of time where we had to figure out how to change our culture, went through some management changes, started investing in people, built a mid-level management team, and finally, by the mid-90s, then it really got off with a different growth rate than we had for the first part of the 90s.
Our guest today is Cliff Hudson, the chairman and CEO of Sonic Drive-In, America's leading drive-in restaurant chain. We'll be back right after this.
This report is brought to you by Express Scripts. For the 10,000 people who become Medicare eligible every day, choosing a Part D prescription drug plan is stressful, particularly when they learn choices made when first enrolling could have long-term financial impact. For current beneficiaries, reevaluating their plan is key to ensure 2018 coverage still meets their pharmacy needs. Rebecca Rabbit, PharmD.
There will be several updates to Medicare Part D plan offerings in 2018, so newly eligible and current beneficiaries need to start preparing now to be ready to enroll in a plan that best suits their needs. This includes creating a list of medications and local pharmacies and mapping out annual medical and pharmacy expenses. This information will make it easier to evaluate current plans and explore new ones when information becomes available on October 1st. Plan enrollment begins October 15th and it ends December 7th, so it's important to start early and carefully evaluate options to choose the best plan.
For more information and tips on choosing the right Medicare Part D plan, visit roadmapformedicare.com or medicare.gov.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hey, Big C here, doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic. We're teeing off at Tuesday, October 3rd at Hawk Point Golf Club. The signature sponsor this year is Hunterdon Healthcare. Besides enjoying a great game of golf, this event is an excellent way for you to promote your business via our sponsorship opportunities, silent auction, and networking luncheon. The Golf Classic launches at 8:30 a.m. with registration, breakfast, and a putting warm-up. This scramble format will begin with a shotgun start at 10 a.m. Plus, we will have some exciting contests to enjoy throughout the day. Oh yes, the winning foursome will be presented with the fabulous Hunterdon Cup. Talk about bragging rights. I got you this year, Team ExxonMobil. I'll see you on the first tee.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com. at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
We're back on Legends of Success. Our guest is Cliff Hudson. Cliff, you know, what I'm hearing here is you've got to be adaptable to changing time.
Yes, that's exactly right. The 80s was about putting programs in place that the system lacked. The 90s became much more about new programs on from product standpoint, of implementing these products across the system, of increased marketing expenditures, really just an investment in growth that we had not done in the 80s, and once we began doing that in the 90s, the picture changed quite a bit.
Well, also, you personally ascended in the company. I believe by 93 or so, you were chief operating officer. In 95, you were named CEO. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. Before 93, probably had some of the responsibilities without the authority. Mm-hmm. And then by 93, became chief operating officer. In 95, chief executive officer of the company. You've got it. That's right.
Well, Cliff, I mean, through all these changes and all these cutbacks, and you look at over the years, how do you continue to keep all the people on board and share a vision and say, don't jump the ship, we're going to make this thing fly? I mean, yeah. How do you do that?
Well, the fun thing about our business, with the restaurant business, but franchising business, we create a lot of opportunity for a lot of people. We share in the ownership. All of our corporate employees receive stock options. Mm-hmm. The stores that we own, all of the managers and supervisors have equity ownership, shared profits in the drive-in store level and on a supervisory basis. And then, of course, the franchisees are entrepreneurs and own their own operations. So it's a real ownership-driven culture, an opportunity for individuals to make a strong impact on their own business or their broader brand. So there's a lot of passion with a lot of folks that really serve with that kind of a team approach with our management team, a collaborative approach internally and with our franchisees, involving them in the planning and strategy development for our business. It's a good way to keep people very plugged in and wanting the thing to succeed. So we've sustained for a number of years a pretty good management team.
Well, it must be good management team. When you take a guy like our next week's guest, and I don't want to give away his whole story that I've researched, but take a guy like Buddy McLean. Buddy told me on a phone conversation he credits two people, you being one of them, as being his greatest mentors in his business career and his life. So how do you take a guy like Buddy McLean, take one of your operators like Buddy. Buddy started out flipping hamburgers. He owns 100 locations. What makes him so special that he stayed with Sonic? Something had to intrigue him and drive him.
Well, I think in Buddy's case, one of the things, and a key thing, I think, with any entrepreneur, but also probably a key life lesson as well, Buddy has fantastic perseverance. He has a philosophy and orientation towards inclusion in his business, allowing co-ownership by a whole lot of people, et cetera. But his perseverance, staying with things on a single drive-in, staying with development of new drive-ins, staying with a strategy and a turnaround of a business as he's acquired stores at times that were underperforming, really perseverance is just a key personality element and a key characteristic of any group that's going to succeed.
Well, he is a real Horatio Alger story. Folks, don't miss next week's edition when we bring Buddy on. You'll hear a tremendous success story. What drives Cliff Hudson? Cliff, you're chairman and CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, 3,200 locations. What's your passion? What drives you?
Well, I'd say what drives me to the greatest extent is working to help create opportunity for people. I really enjoy this at Sonic. I enjoy it for our corporate employees. I enjoy it for creating return for our shareholders. I enjoy it seeing people like Buddy McLean succeed enormously over the year. There's really no greater satisfaction than I get out of that kind of successful experience that other people can have.
Well, that must be pretty obvious. Do you have a number of people like Buddy that have that many locations?
Buddy's one of our larger franchisees, probably our fourth largest franchisee or franchise group.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, our system is made up of multi-unit operators, and it's made up of really success story after success story, people who came in oftentimes as managers of individual drive-ins or very small group operators who have built very successfully over the years and have become just enormously successful. You could call them small business operators. In many cases, they're not. But our system is filled with success story after success story.
You may want to write a book, seriously, about all these success stories and package them in a one Sonic success story book. It's success story after success story.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be a great lesson. Do you go to universities? You lecture? Do you help kids out yourself?
Well, probably do that in different ways. There are opportunities and plenty of requests to talk to, you know, business schools or high schools one sort or another. But in terms of creating opportunity in the education piece, my engagement is greater on the on public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in our headquarters city of Oklahoma City, very involved in public education there. As a matter of fact, a turnaround of a struggling urban school system, and co-chairing a campaign to raise over $500 million to rebuild the school system. And we've had, over about a five-year period, very good success of rebuilding new transportation, technology applied in the district, improving academic performance, new financial systems, really just a complete rebuilding of that public education system. And so, again, I put that very much in the category of helping create opportunity for people, because if young people don't have good educations, their opportunity is going to be significantly limited.
Cliff, isn't it almost, and I commend you for this, but do you feel, agree with me, that when someone such as yourself or a Buddy McClain, when you ascend to a level of success, you almost, not almost, you really do have a moral and ethical obligation to give back and replenish and help others come along?
I think that's right, and I think I hope people who achieve that level of success recognize what you just indicated. But at the same time, I think you can also come to the view, it's yes, you have an obligation, but I think it's also the case that the base that helped build your own business, in our case, the very smart people that are involved in technology, the very smart people that are involved in education, that are involved in marketing or finance or whatever, if we don't have a broad base of population that is brought on, that have good education, et cetera, businesses like ours won't succeed in the long run. So it's for the health of the community and it's for the health of the economy that we can make that investment in our communities.
As always with our favorite guests, we've run out of time rapidly. And I just want to thank you for the gift of your time, Cliff. I know you've must have benefited an awful lot of people and inspired them as well.
Well, I hope so. I know I've been an enormous beneficiary of our business and thankful to a lot of people who have helped that occur.
Well, we thank you for the gift of time, and I hope the listeners, I know a lot of them got a lot out of it, and I thank you so much.
Happy to be with you.
Folks, we've run out of time so quickly. I want to thank you for joining us today. You've been listening to Legends of Success. I'm John Resnick. We'll see you next week.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. It's officially fall, which means football fans are lining up at stadiums across the country to cheer on their favorite teams. According to a Bank of America survey, of the Americans planning to attend a tailgate this football season, more than half plan to travel for a game. Jason Gaughan, Bank of America executive.
While traveling to away games can be expensive, you can offset the cost by using the right rewards card that lets you earn points towards travel on your everyday purchases. With the Bank of America Travel Rewards credit card, you earn 1.5 points for every dollar spent. Whether buying a morning coffee or a new pair of shoes, points that you earn from these purchases can add up and pay off in a big way when you put them toward a trip to your favorite team's away game.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/travelconnected. That's bankofamerica.com/travelconnected.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.